Welcome all sports fans. On this podcast,
no sport is left behind.
I'm Justin Williams.
I'm Cabrera Duran, and this is our brother from Down Under,
me, Wallace Bruce.
We are the Pro Sports Podcasters,
filling you in on the latest news from the world of sports.
This episode is all about mixed martial arts. Justin and I discuss the upcoming UFC bouts, as well as the PFL, the new promotion, the Professional Fighters League, and what it's all about, how they score it, and most importantly, how no fighter can hide from any other fighter in their division. Now to the show. Correct. And this is what I love about this particular fight. Okay, there's something very unique about this fight, and I've been watching the UFC from day one. I've been a UFC and MMA fan forever when it comes right down to it. I've never seen a champion set up his own next fight. And that's what Kamaru Usman did.
Correct.
It's always the other way around. It's always some contender scores a knockout in the octagon, grabs the mic and says, "Usman, let's go."
In that exact voice.
Exactly. In the guttural, "I just finished a fight. I'm going to eat your children," like Tyson said. One of those kind of voices. And Then, you know, as much insult as you can, the champion has no recourse but to accept or look like a wuss. Mm-hmm. So that's usually how it's done. It's always how it's done. But no, Kamaru Usman gets his victory, grabs the mic, and says, "I've heard enough of this Jorge Masvidal guy talking shit about how he took the fight on short notice, and that's why I whooped his ass. I like to give him a full camp so he can prepare to get his ass whooped again," right? And I'm like, that was awesome.
So he can prepare to get his ass whooped again. I loved that line.
And then UFC set it up. Like, they're like, well, shit, if that's what he wants to beat up, fine. And they were totally cool with it because as much as it's already happened, Jorge Masvidal is a draw.
Of course.
Yeah, there's interest. He's the BMF. It's just unique to me in that normally a champion gets called out, champion defends his belt, everyone's like, yeah, way to go, buddy. Nicely done. You're the champion.
You did a thing.
Champion loses, it's way to call him out, way to show him who the boss is. To me, there's more on this particular fight for Kamaru Usman than there's ever been.
I mean, of course, especially considering, okay, so here's my thing, right? I was very new into MMA when this fight first happened on, when was this? July 11th, right? I remember where I was too. I was in London, Ontario. Actually, I was in Sarnia. Sorry. I remember watching this fight and I was like, okay, but why is this such a big deal right now? He went to 5 rounds because on Twitter it was blowing up. Like, Masvidal went 5 rounds with this guy and it came down to a decision. I don't remember what the final decision. I know it was Usman's favor, but I don't know if it was unanimous or split.
I'm sure it was.
I don't recall. But regardless, point is Usman won. Fine. Love it. But the part that kind of shook me a little bit was that Twitter was upset with it. Twitter was like, there should be points given to Masvidal for taking it on like 6 days notice or something, like very, very short notice. And then not being knocked out by Usman, not tapping, nothing, just taking it to Usman. So now that they're doing this again, almost a year later, I don't think Masvidal is going to take it. I think Kamaru Usman is going to steal it one more time. However, I don't think Usman's in for a stronger fight.
I saw the fight. It was dominance the whole way. It was very typical of an Usman-style fight where his defense was phenomenal. Masvidal really couldn't do much to him. And then Usman just wore him down. Now, what surprised me in Usman's last fight, okay, and that was against Burns.
Right.
Is, not only did Usman come out with his usual sort of perfected style, but he got clocked early by Burns, and that almost caused him to say, you know what, I'm not going to go 5 rounds of just wearing him out when he can catch me like that. I'm going to end it now. And he just beat him down and ended it. Mm-hmm. And I think that almost adds to his legacy. He's a very dominant champion, but that just adds a level of, okay, he does what's necessary, but if push comes to shove and he feels like he needs to end the fight, He could just turn it on and end it. And I have a feeling he's going to go into this fight wanting to do that. And the one thing that Kamaru Usman's known for over everything else is his mental game.
Right.
He comes in with a very strong plan. He sticks to it. He's very focused. He doesn't get emotional during a fight, right? I think this could be the first fight we see him somewhat emotional. And because, again, to me, there's more on this fight for him than there is for Masvidal. Masvidal's already lost to him. He loses him again. It's like, okay, we figured that was going to happen. But if Usman loses to Masvidal after calling him out, having beat him previously, that's devastating. And for a guy whose mind is his greatest weapon, I think that would break him.
You honestly think that would break him?
I do. Imagine calling somebody out. It'd be like, to me, it feels like a schoolyard. You know what I mean? Like you're the bully and you call out some guy and then you had no idea he's a jiu-jitsu black belt and he breaks your arm and laughs at you. You know, like imagine how that would feel, right? It just feels that way to me. It feels like, okay, so you're calling out a guy you've already beat. You're not calling out somebody you haven't beat. You're calling a guy you've beaten and you beat him easily. Okay, I saw the fight. It was easy for him.
Right.
If you were to lose that fight,
yep.
Everything about it says you have to win. Like it's almost like he's added additional pressure to himself. Mm-hmm. It'd be like losing a fight to your little brother. You're the big brother, and one day your little brother kicks your ass, and it just humbles you for the rest of your days. Like, I don't know, man. I'm pumped for that fight because of how it occurred. That's why. Mm. It's just because he's the one that called him out. If it wasn't for that, I wouldn't care. I honestly wouldn't.
Right.
But because he's the one that called out, like he called out the challenger, it's just weird. And because of that, now I'm excited for it. It's not the only fight I'm excited for.
Which other fight are you excited for?
Do you have any ones that you're particularly waiting for that are coming up?
You mean the Conor McGregor Dustin Poirier round 3, whatever you want to call it, trilogy? No, I'm not excited for that one.
I mean, neither am I. I'm not excited for that either. Although the UFC after, that would be, what, 262? Has a great card.
You know what I think is hilarious? Do you know who the backup is if Masvidal can't fill in?
No.
They just announced it a few hours ago. Colby Covington.
That makes sense.
Yeah. But it's just something I wouldn't expect.
So the main event is Charles Oliveira versus Michael Chandler.
Mm-hmm.
I am pumped for that fight. Their last two wins were two of the best wins I've seen in quite some time.
Oh, Chandler's win was disgusting.
Ridiculous. And he won in a way that no one expected him to.
Oh, poor Dan Hooker, too. That guy was talking so much smack.
Right? And then also on that card is you've got a declining Ronaldo Jacare Souza. Okay? Mm-hmm. Jacare used to be one of my favorite fighters, but he is not the same fighter he used to be. So this is kind of like a statement fight for him. If he can pull this win over Muniz, he'll be sort of cementing himself as a staple still in the UFC. But I think if he loses this fight, that could be the end of Jacare Souza in the UFC. So that's an important fight. Another fight on that card is got one of the most interesting characters, period, in lightweight, and that's Tony Ferguson.
I love Tony Ferguson.
El Cucuy. So this is a guy who had the longest win streak for quite some time and was supposed to fight Khabib like 3 or 4 times for a title.
Yep.
Something always happened. And then when he finally has a chance to basically have a title eliminator bout against Gaethje, he gets owned.
Correct.
And since then, he's been kind of like the forgotten guy. He's like the other guy in the division. He went from being at the top of the division and one of the most feared guys in the division to what is he now?
Right. Now, here's my thing with that. Before the Justin Gaethje fight, he tore his knee. Did you see those pictures when he tripped over the cable at a studio?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And you can see it in his fights, too. Again, I was still really new to this. This was, like, when I first watched this was May, and I started getting into MMA a little more seriously before, like, in July, but then you still kind of feedered me in. You're like, okay, it's cute you've seen a few fights, now let me explain things. But still in my infancy, I remember they were talking about this fight and they had mentioned that Tony Ferguson did not look the same since he had that leg injury. So I don't know if that played a factor, but I'm going to assume it obviously would have. done so, because since that injury, I don't think he's won.
Correct. So that, yeah, that's got to play a factor.
Right.
But again, I want to see what he does. And we saw the Beneil Dariush fight not too long ago. He looked pretty good. So this should be a decent test of where he's at.
Just to comment on that real quick, I'm looking at the 262 card and I'm noticing there are four lightweight bouts scheduled. That means 8 lightweight fighters are going to go at it during this card.
Yeah.
Do you think this is to establish the dominance of the roster?
Well, I mean, we're going to find out who the champion is. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it's going to sort of reorder the rankings. Because then you got to decide, you know, who's going to fight next and who needs to fight whom to earn a title shot. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, the next big fight after this is McGregor versus Poirier. Mm-hmm. And Poirier actually turned down a title shot to fight McGregor.
Of course, they want to end that trilogy.
Plus, it's more money.
Oh, of course.
It's a bigger payday. I mean, if Poirier wins that fight 100%, he gets the next title shot, 100%. Mm-hmm. If he loses that fight, the UFC really celebrates. And they give Conor a title shot. Not that he really deserves one, but they would give him one.
He's always going to get a title shot. He could be 64, he'd come back for a title shot.
Right? So the winner of that fight is going to get a title shot. It's whether it be Oliveira or Chandler, wins in such convincing fashion that there's the potential of them fighting somebody else before they fight the winner of that fight.
Really?
Yeah. If Chandler was to win the way he did against Dan Hooker, mm-hmm. you know, it's like the first round and it's over. Right? He comes out smiling, you know, does a photo shoot. There's nothing wrong with him, then he could fight, you know, right away. He could turn around and fight in a month or two.
Correct. Well, yeah.
So, and I mean, I guarantee you, whatever happens in the McGregor-Poirier fight, it's not going to be a quick turnaround. Mm-hmm. So then you've got the option to take a fight before you take Poirier and McGregor. And it all comes down to what is that current champion, like, what's he hoping to achieve? Does he just want big fights, or does he want to rack up as many wins as he can and to take as much money as he can from the time he's there? It's a balancing act now, right? It's the UFC's changed. It's not the way it used to be. So now it comes down to, do I want lots of title defenses and make money that way, or do I want to hold out for really big fights so I can make a huge payday, win or lose, I'm still okay? And that takes me to one of the next fights I want to talk about. When it comes down to win or lose, I'm still okay. The Diaz brothers are the kings of that.
Yes. Yes, they are.
And I would say Nate is the official king. Okay. Scrap that. Nate makes just as much money, if not more, when he loses.
Well, do you remember that ridiculous contract he was signed to for like 5 years? It was $40,000 to show, $40,000 to win.
Yeah.
Pretty good. It was just like, oh, I mean, yo. Pretty dope. Fight twice a year and making $80,000 minimum. Love it. But then by the third year, he was getting higher up and he was moving the needle and stuff and people wanted to see him. So he wasn't getting paid enough. He knew he was going to re-sign with the UFC, but he had to ride out 2 years of making dog money, which is, there was a little bit there where he stopped caring on him. Oh, I shouldn't say stopped caring, but he didn't take it as seriously. He's renegotiated contracts wherever he goes to the point where that doesn't happen again. So.
Oh yeah, he's a $1 million fighter.
Oh, 1,000%. He'll move the needle so quickly.
Right? And when it comes down to it, he is a great fighter, but he's not fantastic. You know what I mean?
Oh, he's not pretty to watch. No.
They just know how to work the system. I mean, the first time he fought Conor, it was strictly for the money. Mm-hmm. He went into that fight. It was obvious he went into that fight thinking he was going to lose. He talked all kinds of shit, but he thought he was going to lose. Mm-hmm. And then he wins, and he was, like, surprised. So he gets a second shot at Conor. It's like, yeah, right on, more money. And he could have won that fight, but he didn't care. He's just like, I'm taking it to the bank.
100%.
And now he's decided to come back. They've scheduled him against Leon Edwards, which is such a weird matchup, really. But it should be a good matchup, to be honest. They both slug it out. But it's at welterweight. To me, honestly, Nate Diaz is a lightweight, although lately he's been fighting at welterweight because he doesn't want to be bothered doing a weight cut. Like, seriously, he was a very dangerous lightweight, okay? Very dangerous lightweight. But that requires work to actually cut weight.
And he doesn't want to do that.
No, honestly, he just wants to scrap and get paid for it. And the way he sees it is, you know, if I got into a street fight with somebody, it's not like I'm weight cutting before I do. It's just I get into a fight, I fight. Winner wins, loser loses, move on. And that's how he kind of basically approaches every fight now. There was a time where Nate Diaz could have been the lightweight champion. He really could have been. He had all the skills. He's very long, lanky, dangerous, lightweight from whether it be standing or on the ground. He had every chance to be a lightweight champion, but didn't care enough, honestly, about winning.
Sorry, when is this fight scheduled for?
I'm not sure if they've got the actual date yet. They've just signed the deal that it's going to be Leon Edwards versus Nate Diaz, but I don't know if they've actually scheduled a date for it.
Because it says UFC 262 as the co-main, but I'm looking at 262 right now, and the co-main is Ronaldo Souza versus Andre Muniz.
Yeah, but okay, so if they're saying it's 262, then they're going to bump Souza and Muniz down.
Oh, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so we'll just have an extra prelim, I suppose. Early prelims.
Correct.
But you know what I'm actually excited for? And this is like legitimately what I'm excited for, just because this man has been gone for 2 years due to, like, you know, pissing a hole through the wall, melting the cup he had to pee in. It's TJ Dillashaw versus Corey Sandhagen.
I'm pumped for that too, man. I'm pumped for that. The main reason I'm pumped for that is not Dillashaw. It's the Sandhagen knockout of Frankie Edgar that has me pumped for that. That knockout, oh my God. I felt for Frankie Edgar. I was like, oh shit, he could be dead. Right? It was so bang on. I thought it was like hospitalization time. Like, it could be over. And then thank God he came too. And I was like, oh, okay, he's okay. He's okay. Right? But man, that shot was so precise.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird because so Frankie Edgar is a very mobile, a lot of head movement, a lot of feints, very mobile fighter.
Mm-hmm.
But he's very orthodox that way. It's very standard mobility. He looks like a boxer that's just constantly in motion.
Right.
Dillashaw is different. Dillashaw uses the elusive movement. Like he copied Dominic Cruz.
Dominic Cruz, okay.
So he basically looked at what Dominic Cruz did as a bantamweight when Dominic Cruz was the best bantamweight, period.
Mm-hmm.
And said, I can do that. I can learn that. He went out and got the same coach that Dominic Cruz had. Literally, wow. He went and got his coach and learned the way to move around the octagon the way Cruz did to make it difficult for his opponents to really, you know, zero in on him, while at the same time providing himself with angles that he could potentially get knockouts. And he used it to good effect and eventually became the bantamweight champion for a short period of time. Now he's back. He's going to take that back into the cage against a guy who just starched Frankie Edgar, even though Frankie Edgar is very mobile. So I'm interested to see if Sandhagen can figure out Dillashaw quick enough to just lay him out. But people got to remember Dillashaw, this guy is very skilled. He is well prepared. He's had all that time off because, well, he cheated.
Mm-hmm.
He's coming back to make a statement, right? And kind of erase the negativity that surrounds his name.
So I was looking at comparing the two. Corey Sandhagen is 1.8 meters in length. So he's a like six and change.
No, that's not six.
1.8 meters?
Yeah, he's like 5'10".
1.8 meters. Yeah, sorry, 1.83 is six. So he's closer to six. He's 5'10". Yeah, 5'9".
He's like my height.
And then TJ Dillashaw is 1.68, so he's 5'5".
Yeah.
So it's a 3-inch height difference there. Cool, fine. All right. Now, Dillashaw is also 35 years old and hasn't fought in 2 years. Corey Sandhagen's 28.
Yeah.
So there's a 7-year gap there. I think Sandhagen has this in the bank. Mind you.
Really?
Mind you, Dillashaw could have been doing some elite weird combat training that I have no idea what's happening. But I just read an article in MMA News that Dillashaw is overlooking Aljamain Sterling as a title holder. He's like, yeah, he has a title, but he's not who I have to beat in order to own this division. And he's like, I have to beat Corey Sandhagen, ranked number 2, and then I have to beat Peter Yan. That is what it is. He's like, I predict that Sterling won't even have the belt by the time I'm ready to fight for it.
So Sterling's getting disrespected left, right, and center by everybody because he won by DQ, and that's not really his fault.
No, it's not. 100%.
But, I mean, so Sugar Sean O'Malley said pretty much the same thing to him. He literally said it to him. Mm-hmm. After I'm done here, I'm, you know, I'm coming after you if you're still there. You know, but I mean, and Sugar Sean O'Malley is still just establishing himself as a fighter in the UFC, and he's really calling out Aljamain Sterling. But I think everybody saw that fight, and everybody thought the same thing, which is the fight's starting to turn into Peter Yan's favor, and the longer this goes, the more it looks like Peter Yan's going to win.
Mm-hmm.
And then DQ. So as much as he deserves to be champion because he got fouled severely, how long he remains champion, if the next fight is against Peter Yan, they kind of want it to be, he's not going to be, he's going to lose that fight. Peter Yan's going to win.
We hope, anyways.
Personally, I don't think Peter Yan deserves the immediate rematch because he DQ'd him because he fouled him.
Mm-hmm.
But you should make Peter Yan suffer a little bit, make him fight somebody else first and earn that title shot back. But whatever, right? I've looked at some of these bantamweights coming up, and it's a scary proposition for whoever's at the top of the heap. And the only guy I see is potentially a little bit better than everybody else is Peter Yan.
If Peter Yan can remember the rules.
Yeah, that was, it's just messed up, man. That's just messed up.
Yeah, it is. But I don't know. I feel like as much as I almost want to see Dillashaw kind of come back and be this new tyrant and just run it through, he's been gone 2 years. He's on the backside of his career. I don't know if a 2-year layoff is going to do it. I would love to see him versus Peter Yan. I think that'd be great. However, I think Sanhagen's just going to take it to Dillashaw. Dillashaw is going to get upset, fight another round, and then move on to Bellator or something else. Like, I can't see him sticking around for a while.
Really? Man, you have zero faith in TJ, eh?
100%. 100% no faith.
Okay, so it's Saturday, May 8th. I want you to come over so we can watch this.
Right? I will book it off whenever I get rescheduled.
I want you to be here so we can watch this together because I do not underestimate TJ Dillashaw. I've seen the majority of his fights, and he's got some sneaky power. I don't know. Sanhagen hasn't proved enough to me yet. This is a big stepping stone for him. This is a huge step up.
Right. Well, I don't know. I feel like it can be done.
Thanks for listening to the show. If you like what you're hearing, why not become a supporter of us over at Patreon? You can find even more content, exclusive backstage extended interviews with our guests, and also exclusive content from each of us, myself, Kobe, and Justin. You can find that and more at patreon.com/prosportspodcasters.
So from what I understand about the Professional Fighters League is that it's run like a sports season.
Right, so they have they have off seasons.
Well, and the thing is, and everybody places everybody. You're like your own team.
Mm-hmm.
So you fight everyone.
I like it.
It has a regular season, and then you fight everybody in your weight class, because that's your division.
Mm-hmm.
And just like any other sports season, you earn points for wins, losses, whatever. But what's also cool about this is that you get like points for submissions and knockouts and shit. So technically, the person who wins the most matches might not necessarily be at the top of the standings.
Mm-hmm.
If all they do is win by decision.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
See, fighters earn regular season points based on their performance, with 3 points for a win plus bonus points for knockouts and submissions. Each fighter is then seeded in standings for their weight class based on their point totals. So you could win, but all you do is win by decision. And then some other guy could take a couple of losses, including losing to you. But if he knocks out or submits everybody else, he could be significantly higher than you in the standings.
This is so cool.
Following a regular season is a single elimination PFL playoffs, which leads to the PFL World Championship. The winners of each title bout are crowned PFL World Champion of their respective weight classes and earn $1 million. Viewers will be delivered next-gen stats never before seen in MMA through the PFL's proprietary Smart Cage platform and Cageonomics technology.
Do they need an official podcast group?
Yeah, I know. Okay, if the fight ends in a draw, both fighters will receive 1 point. The bonus for winning a fight in the first, second, or third round is 3 points, 2 points, and 1 point, respectively. For example, if a fighter wins a fight in the first round, the fighter will receive 6 total points. Ah. So if you could knock a guy out in the first round, you get 6 points. Mm-hmm. But if you knock him out in the third round, you get 4. And if you go the distance and win by decision, you only get 3. So a guy would have to win twice by decision to earn just as many points as somebody who knocks his opponent out in the first round, but then loses the next fight.
Right? So Lewis would be all over this. He'd just be knocking people out.
It would be awesome. This is so awesome because it literally forces the fighters to be like, oh, do I want to go for it or should I just play it safe?
Honestly, and you're going to have people do Portugal status, which is how they won the Europa Cup, by just drawing every game until it really counted. And they're like,
that's right. Do the whole, like, just play defensively. Don't give up too many points and try and get, like, decision wins if you can.
Which in that case would be decision wins. But how much is it for a submission? So it's just first round win, right? So knockout. So if I make you tap in the first round, is that still 6 points?
That's still 6 points. If you end the fight in the first round. Maybe
you
end the fight.
Okay.
You get 3 additional points plus the 3 for winning. Second round, 2 additional points plus the 3 for winning. And third round, 1 additional point. And if you go the distance and just win, you get your 3 points. But that's so cool.
Right.
It allows a knockout artist who maybe doesn't have the best cardio to still win the whole thing.
Right.
Because there have been guys in other promotions that got by on just dominant wrestling and controlling their opponent. Mm-hmm. And that's how they won every fight. And even like Dana White is not a fan of that, right? That is not his thing. He's tried to get rid of those guys because he sees it as a potential exciting fighter getting beat by a boring fighter and taking and basically extinguishing the flame of the exciting fighter, right? So he's done his best to cut those guys and get them out of the promotion, even though they're great fighters and they know how to win.
Elias Theodorou.
Yeah, he's an example. He's a very good example. But in this case, the way this system works, that's just not going to happen. That's just not a smart way to fight.
No, it's not.
I can't wait for PFL now. I honestly can't wait to see this fucking thing.
I'm so excited. I honestly just want to tweet to them the whole time.
You got to figure, if you're in that, if you catch a guy well in the first round, you're going to go for the finish every time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Try and pick my spot. It's like, oh, I rocked him. Pounce. Unload. Get those extra 3 points. It's such a cool idea.
I like the seasonal thing. It's weird, but I like it.
See, that's another thing, too. We didn't even say that, but basically what I liked about the whole idea of that you're in a league and you have a full season and you got to fight everybody. It's not like any other promotion where you can duck guys. You know what I mean? Even champs duck guys. Even champs in the UFC are like, I'm not good against a wrestler. Like, I'm not good against guys that take me down. So I'm not fighting this fucking guy, and I'm not fighting this fucking guy. And hopefully the UFC can see my value, so they help me avoid fighting those two guys until I'm at a level that they're no longer worthy of fighting me. You know what I mean? Like, it's weird that way. You could have a guy that's, say, the 15th ranked guy in his division, and he's a phenomenal wrestler and scores every takedown he goes after. And the UFC will put him against guys that are like up and comers, and they're like, let's see if he can get past him. If he not, nah, whatever. And they'll also put him against guys who have a good wrestling defense or are also negate the guy's wrestling, kind of keep him at his position, because they could have guys in the top five that couldn't beat a wrestler on their best day. But those top five guys are huge draws for pay-per-views. So the last thing you want to do is put them against this 15th ranked wrestler that just beat them. The promotions do shit. Like, they shelter guys from certain guys that they know aren't worth as much money in the long run and would probably have a bad day against those guys. In this tournament, there's no sheltering. You got to face everybody. If someone in your division is your worst fucking nightmare, well, get ready.
They're coming for you.
Don't fucking go to sleep. Exactly. You're going to have to face it, right? I think that's just amazing, man. There's none of this vying for the easy matchup or avoiding certain guys. It's you agreed to be in this division. This is the division you're in, right? Yeah. Okay, so you're fucking facing everybody. You're going to have to fight all of them.
No fans or buts about it.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome, man.